Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. So glad to have you here. If you are interested in anything we're talking about today, we can we will be posting it on our website, themelkayshow.com. Go over there, check out our resource page. If you want to support us, that's great. I'm very excited. I have a guest today that is going to lift the veil on a lot of things that have happened in our nation and are happening now and how we can prevent it in the future. I'm very honored to welcome Captain Al Francis to the show. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Well, thank you for having me, Mel. Basically, I'm going to talk about several things today, but the most important thing is the downing of TW-800 on July the 17th, 1996.
Right.
Well, with all that's going on in America and the world in general today, you might ask, why is it important that we look back at an event that occurred over a quarter of a century ago? And I'm going to try to explain why. And basically, it's if we don't learn from that event, we might indeed repeat it, but on a much larger scale. We have, for instance, right now, something in excess of 300,000 getaways that have crossed our southern and northern border just in the last year. They aren't all just people trying to bring in drugs, fentanyl, and so forth, or get into the country for nefarious means. Some of them absolutely positively are terrorists. And those terrorists can do something that will basically shut down our air transportation system very, very quickly. And I'll discuss that in a little greater detail later on.
Right.
At any rate, I don't know if you remember, but in July the 3rd, 1988, one of the U.S. Missile carriers, the USS Vincennes, shot down Iran Air Flight 655 over the Gulf of Hormuz. 290 civilians and crew were killed in that accident. The United States government admitted that it was indeed an accident, was not intended to happen. A lot of things contributed to that, but the United States actually paid reparations to the survivors of that flight, or not survivors, but of the family of those killed on that flight. Well, Hezbollah, the Iranian-backed terrorist organization, and the mullahs and the Iranian government have a very long memory. They aren't, as we are here in the United States, basically we can't remember anything that happened more than 15 or 20 minutes ago. Yeah. They were aware of that, and they wanted revenge. And I believe very strongly they got their revenge in great part with what I believe is a shoot down of TW-800 on July the 17th, 1996. That airplane, 747, which, by the way, I had flown with my wife and daughter only a couple of weeks earlier, from Athens back to New York, took off for Paris at approximately 8:19 local time on July the 17th. Less than 20 minutes later, all that was left of the aircraft and the 230 people that was on board was in flaming wreckage on the surface of the Atlantic Ocean, just off the south shore of Long Island, or indeed on the bottom. No one survived. It was a horrific thing. There is good evidence that possibly some, at least, of those people rode the airplane all the way down to the water after it exploded. At that time, I was the council chairman and captain representative for the Airline Pilots Association Council number 24, which represented all of the TWA pilots at that time that flew international routes. As I said, I was a 747 captain myself at the time and was very familiar not only with the type, the 747, but that particular aircraft. There is a series of protocols that occur anytime there's an aircraft accident. And that protocol begins with the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB. They send immediately out a what's called a go team to get to the scene as quickly as possible. Initially, first responders are there, the police, the fire department, in this case, the Coast Guard, the New York Police Department, Marine Unit, et cetera, were on scene. And they're trying to do their job to, if there are any survivors, help them, if not, to secure the wreckage site. Well, the NTSB GO team arrived and began to do their work. And shortly thereafter, something occurred that I have never seen before, and to the best of my knowledge, has never happened since. The FBI, under an individual named James Kallstrom, who became the voice of the government in the investigation, came in and basically took over the investigation from the NTSB. Although the FBI had no expertise in investigating an aviation accident. When they did this, they basically threatened the people from the NTSB, the professional investigators, to not interfere, or if they did interfere, that they could be prosecuted for interfering with a criminal investigation. Those of us that found out about this very shortly thereafter, and I arrived at the scene the next morning, were absolutely shocked at this behavior on the part of the FBI. Later on, what has become known in modern parlance as the deep state began to intercept itself into this investigation. That included not only the FBI, but the CIA. And we're hearing about the CIA getting involved with very many things now, apparently including the Kennedy assassination and who knows what else, but they definitely were involved in this. One of the big things, and as I said, I arrived on scene the next morning as quickly as I could from my home in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And we obviously thought probably what had happened to this airplane when it blew up in flight was something similar to Pan Am 103, which exploded over Lockerbie, Scotland, and killed everybody on boarding, and also some residents of the town of Lockerbie. But shortly thereafter, another thing began to come to the fore, and that was there were many eyewitnesses that were reporting that they had seen what they described as rocket trails or flares or whatever rise off the water and then explode in the close proximity to the airplane. These included some very, very credible witnesses, including an individual who was a major in the New York Air National Guard. His name was Fritz Meyer. And he and his co-pilot were out doing a check ride that night. And as they pulled up from one of their approaches, they had a window seat to TW-800 just prior to and, of course, after the explosion, which was they noticed two things explode. Smaller explosions in the vicinity of the airplane, followed very shortly thereafter by an enormous petroleum-based explosion, which literally blew the front third of the airplane off, and it crashed into the water. Fritz Meyer is an interesting individual, very interesting individual. He actually had been in the Navy during the Vietnam War and had flown rescue helicopters off Navy destroyers, which were stationed in international waters just off North Vietnam. And their job was to, if an airplane was hit on a raid into Hanoi or Haiphong Harbor, to go in and try to rescue the pilot before they were captured by the Vietnamese. Because of that, Fritz Meyer had seen many rockets fired at aircraft. He knew exactly what it looked like, and he testified to this. He had no doubt in his mind that the airplane had been hit by one and probably two rockets of unknown origin. Many other very credible witnesses were interviewed by the FBI, but something very strange occurred. When the FBI interviews you for anything, and you may have been interviewed at some time, they come up with a Form 302, and it's a specific form that is used to interview people. That Form 302 normally comes from something that has been very carefully documented and taped, you know, recorded with the witness. In this case, the witnesses were not searched out by the FBI. These were people that were calling in trying to explain what they had seen, including a Major Fritz Meyer. When he finally went to a trailer out on Long Island someplace, which was the temporary headquarters of the FBI, Major Myers said that he was astounded that no one took any notes. No one took any notes whatsoever at all. It was not recorded. He noted that. And also, when he left, they said, well, we'll get back to you. And guess what? They never did. This is typical behavior of very many witnesses, eyewitnesses to this event. Anyway, Kallstrom took over. I met James Kallstrom, ex-Marine, a long time. He was the agent in charge for this accident in New York. All I can say about him is that he was one of the most profane people I have ever met. His language was maybe, this is an insult to the Marines, but it was Marine gunnery sergeant language. Right. He dominated people. He did not listen. He dominated. And it became very, very plain that he believed at the beginning that the airplane had blown up because of a bomb on board. Very shortly thereafter, as I said, the idea of the missile with all these reports coming in from eyewitnesses surfaced. And for whatever reason, Kallstrom did everything he could to squash this. He didn't want this done. And I began to realize in talking to him and talking to the other FBI people there that this was coming down from Washington. It wasn't it. He, as they say, it was way above his pay grade to do what was going on. It had to come out of Washington. So I began trying to investigate that and figure out what went on. And there was a very interesting event that occurred from several high-ranking officials in the administration of Bill Clinton. And you began to trace that back. And there was an individual named Sandy Berger. Do you remember Sandy Berger?
I sure do, yeah.
He is the individual that stole things from the National Archives, right. Stuffed them in his underwear, and then cut them up after he had left. And he destroyed all three copies. So to this day, we don't know what those copies were, right. Because they were destroyed by him. And of course, he admitted his guilt finally and received a little slap on the wrist, basically.
Right.
When the airplane went down, there's a thing called a voice recorder and a flight recorder on all commercial aircraft. And when they go into the water, there are things called pingers, and they are basically produce a sound that can be heard from boats on the surface to locate the things. And the pingers went off. The Coast Guard reported hearing both pingers. Also, the New York Police Department Marine Unit reported them. And they were pinging away like mad. There was a thing called a salvage barge, which was operated by Weeks Marine, very large salvage barge that was used in all sorts of marine salvage on both coasts. But it happened to be very, very close by. And the Coast Guard immediately called Weeks Marine and said, can you come? They had 50 commercial divers on board. And can you come and help us get this wreckage as quickly as we possibly can, including the very vital voice and flight recorders. That week said absolutely and headed in the direction. Shortly thereafter, it came down from Washington, D.C., from the Department of Justice and basically from the White House that they didn't want Weeks Marine in there. They wanted Navy salvage ships. The Navy salvage ships were many, many miles away and, of course, couldn't be on scene very quickly. And in fact, as all of this information is in my presentation in greater detail, but the first naval ship did not show up for almost a week. The one that finally was the primary ship, the USS Grapple, showed up well past that, almost 2 weeks later. Well, the strange thing that occurred is that as soon as those ships arrived on scene and the Navy divers went down, the pingers stopped.
Oh, no.
They were going to run at least another 2 weeks under the conditions. So they stopped. And some 48 to 72 hours later, suddenly restarted. Both of them restarted. When they restarted, they were able to find both the voice and the flight data recorder, but they were not in the tail of the airplane where they would normally be in the vertical stabilizer. They were sitting upright on a sand bottom.
Oh, right.
There were also, strangely, gaps in the material. They had not been badly damaged because they were so far away, but there were gaps in the recording material. That was never explained how that occurred, et cetera. The whole thing then with the flight recorder and the data recorder, there are always what are called interested parties if there is an investigation. And those interesting parties are generally the airline involved, the manufacturer of the airplane, the manufacturer of the engines and various other parts of the airplane, anything that can be used, because they have to discover what happens. Well, the interested parties included the unions, ALPA, IFA, the Flight Attendants Union, the IAM, the Mechanics Union, TWA, obviously, Boeing, and a bunch of other people were involved. Well, almost immediately after these flight and voice recorders were found, the interested parties were, because of the actions of a federal lawyer there that was in charge of this investigation now, they were prevented from any of the actions that were being done to bring up all this wreckage. They couldn't even have an observer on any of the ships. This was, again, unprecedented. It had never, ever happened before. They began bringing the Grapple, was, as I said, the Navy salvage ship, began bringing in large quantities of wreckage from this whole wreckage scene. And they would be brought in on a barge to a dock by Calverton, Long Island. As they were brought in, the FBI was first on board and began examining all of this stuff. And again, there's a protocol. Everything that was brought up, the Navy divers that were bringing it up with grease pencils made marks. And it showed where it was found with a GPS location and a picture taken of it on the bottom before it was recovered. And this included, unfortunately, all of the 230 people that were on right. board the airplane. Well, they had, because of the fact that the Navy took nearly 2 weeks to get there and start salvage, you can imagine what the marine creatures did to some of the bodies. It was absolutely horrific. The families were distraught. And of course, I was dealing with the families at the time, including the one young man, Oliver Crick, who was the student flight engineer on board the flight. My wife and I went to Littleton, Colorado, outside of Denver, where he was from, and attended his funeral as represents the ALPA and also TWA. Wow. And I promised the Cricks at that time, I said, I'm going to find out what happened to this airplane and what happened to your son. And I promise you, and I worked on that for the next 25 plus years.
Right, I know.
They, along with other people, have recently successfully filed a federal lawsuit to bring this information out. It's going to come out now in discovery. And we've had the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and now the Biden administration that have all fought tooth and nail to bring this information out and bring it to the general public. Well, this is something, as I say, I hope we have a saying with pilots, and that pilots don't die, they fly west. This comes from a statement that was made during World War I, when the pilots were dying, you know, within hours of getting to the front. And when you flew west, your body was brought home. And it's they'll fly west for a final check ride. That I get a little choked up when I think about that. Yeah. At any rate, this began to fall apart as far as an investigation. The aircraft was basically reassembled at a large hangar in Calverton, Long Island. And as they began bringing all these pieces to the surface, the FBI said, went on and went to the barges and they grabbed pieces off. And all of this is supposed to be as I said, it's all been cataloged. Well, it's supposed to be now entered into a formal investigation process where they know where everything was, where it came from, so it can be reassembled in the right spot. The FBI was grabbing some of these pieces and taking them to vans without logging them in. This was absolutely against the law, against protocol, et cetera. They told the NTSB people that they were taking them to Washington, to their laboratories, to be investigated, and that they would be returned. Well, they weren't logged in, so who knows what was returned and what wasn't. The stuff then went to Calverton, and the procedures there were unbelievable. We had people from ALPA that were system specialists that were working with everybody. And what would happen is at the end of the day, the FBI would body search all the investigators of the interested parties and remove any notes. All photographs, all films were taken and removed, and they were not allowed to take anything out of the hangar. This had never, ever happened before. It's never happened again. So when they did this, we would have to take our people who had been working an 8, 10, sometimes 12-hour day, let them go back to the hotel, take a shower, have something to eat, and then spend perhaps another 2 hours debriefing them, trying to find out, what did you do today? What did you see? Et cetera, et cetera. Again, the procedures were draconian. It's never happened before. These people were basically threatened. Well, one of the things we noticed was that the FBI was taking pieces of the fuselage, the skin of the airplane, and using small hammers to distort them, banging on them. Well, you say, why would you do that? Well, the reason they did it, quite simply, was if the airplane had exploded from an interior explosion rather than imploded from something, the skin would either be bent out or bent in. So when they were distorting it, they were distorting what happened to the airplane, and they were caught doing this, denied everything, and threatened our investigators to be removed from the scene if they said anything about it. All of this came out. Then we began noticing various and sundry things of things being misplaced on the floor of the hangar. We then noticed a situation where one of our investigators and an individual named Captain Terry Stacy, who was a flight manager for TWA and the head of the 747 program, and he was the head representative of the company there. It was brought to his attention that there was a streak of reddish material on the back of several of the seats just forward of where the front third of the airplane separated. And this material was very unusual. It was not part of the glue that attached the seat backs to the seats. It wasn't part of anything that would normally be on the airplane. The FBI was not interested in this. And Terry Stacy said, this is crazy. I've got to get this investigated. So he actually cut a couple of small strips of this material, took it to an individual who was a retired police detective in Los Angeles, whose wife was an instructor of TWA flight attendants, and said, can you have this analyzed for me? Which he did. That individual was named James Sanders. He has worked, by the way, with Jack Cashel and on several books about this. Right. But at any rate, they took it and they discovered that it was not anything that was used normally in the airplane, as I say, glue, fabric material, or anything, but was actually found in explosives and rocket propellants. When this came out, the FBI arrested Captain Stacy, arrested the Sanders and his wife. And this was, by the way, after the FBI had declared that it was not an explosion of anything. It was caused by a rocket or a bomb, but it was caused by a spark of unknown origin, which ignited a small amount of fuel in the center section tank of the airplane. In other words, they said it was no longer a criminal investigation, right, but they arrested Terry Stacy and the Sanders. The Sanders were convicted. Terry Stacey basically pleaded no contest because he was about to lose not only his pilot's license, but his entire retirement. Oh, this went on. It was incredible what was happening. Well, one of the things that people should definitely understand is that jet fuel, it's called Jet A, is a very non-volatile fuel. You can take a puddle of jet fuel, Jet A fuel, and toss lighted matches into it, and they will extinguish just like it's water. It's extremely difficult to get Jet A to burn. You have to compress it. You have to mist it very fine, et cetera. And then they use a thing called an igniter, which is like a spark plug on steroids. It shoots out a 3,000-volt spark that gets the engine going. Once a jet engine gets going, it runs until, without any other ignition, until you cut the fuel off. That's how you shut off a jet engine. So the concept that some small spark, because the material that was in there was very low voltage material, that some small spark could set off this non-volatile vapor and blow the front third of a three-quarter of a million-pound aircraft off was ridiculous. It couldn't happen, and everybody that knew anything about airplanes, including by the FAA, who has privately said this many times over, obviously not for human consumption, they're beyond the FAA because they don't want to get fired.
Right.
At any rate, they knew it was ridiculous. It couldn't happen. And again, this is all covered in my presentation, but IAM, our mechanics, did their own investigation of, and they came up with basically that it was obvious that the airplane, the tank exploded, but it wasn't because of a spark of unknown origin. It was for something else that happened exterior to the aircraft.
Right.
Again, this is long stuff and how it occurred. Then the FAA demanded that the NTSB take a center section tank from a 747 of the same type over to Bruntingthorpe, England, and they did some tests on this on the possibility of this occurring. So the first thing that they did is they set the tank up, and to simulate the temperatures that they said were in place at the time, they put Bunsen burners underneath the tank. They filled it up with the amount of fuel they assumed was there, and they waited till the fuel was boiling. At that time, they used a normal spark plug. Nothing happened. So they now installed one of those igniters that I described with this giant spark flame, whatever you want to call it, and they fired that off. Nothing happened. They then filled the tank with propane above the kerosene, the Jet A fuel. And sure enough, when they fired that off, it blew up. But the tank was not distorted the way the tank and the wreckage had been. In other words, it was not going out as an explosion. It was going in. The rivet pattern went in. That meant something happened outside the airplane that caused that tank to rupture. And indeed, all of the fuel tanks, the airplane was nearly full of fuel on the wings. Not the center section tank, had a very small amount in there. That's only used in very long flights. So the Bruntingthorpe test said, what you've said is the case, could not happen. That information, they then had in Baltimore, an extensive hearing, lasted a whole week in Baltimore. That particular thing, they didn't use any of that information that wasn't brought out in the Baltimore tests. None of the eyewitnesses was allowed to testify. Mm-hmm. And there was an individual that was new to the NTSB that did everything in his power to basically denigrate all the information that was coming out that they didn't want. Jim Hall obviously had orders. He was the chairman of the NTSB, who had no experience, by the way, in aviation at all. The Washington Post, which isn't exactly a conservative publication, right, stated when he was brought on board by Clinton that his only experience in transportation was that he had a driver's license.
Well, we have that now with Buttigieg.
Yeah.
They don't seem to prioritize experience.
That is a whole other thing. We just about lost 300 people because Buttigieg is worried more about bridge equity than making our airports up to the standard that they're supposed to be. You probably know about that, which happened at JFK.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But keep going with this, because the scariest part is that it appears that some of these people that were the investigators on this Flight 800 continued to be investigators on 9/11 and continue to be investigators again. And now with everything that's coming out from the whistleblowers and people finally speaking out about the FBI, your story is more important than ever, because we have been, I believe, manipulated and in my opinion, brainwashed to some extent to not ever question the FBI. But more and more stories like this come out. And it's crazy, because had Flight 800 been a proper investigation, we might not have had further events in time again and again. But it does seem that they have at least in New York, a cleanup crew that is the same cleanup crew as the one that covered up 800.
That's absolutely true. And Mel, do you remember at the time, the CIA produced what we refer to, those of us that know how stupid it is, the cartoon. And that was of the airplane exploding and the front end coming off. And they had to explain what these smoke trails and these flames were that came up off the water. So what they said was the airplane, which had stopped its climb at 13,000 feet approximately, exploded, the front end blew off, and the airplane then did what they referred to as a zoom climb up to almost 17,000 feet, and it was trailing burning fuel behind it. Okay, so it looked like a rocket, and that's what the people saw.
The only
problem is, aerodynamically, that's impossible.
Right.
Because of the design of a swept wing airplane, and everyone that knew anything about aviation knew it, because of the design of the airplane, if you blew off the front end of the airplane, it would actually not pitch up. It would roll violently and pitch down, which is exactly what happened to the airplane. And so this whole zoom climb thing, again, was something that the CIA produced at the request of the FBI and the DOJ that people believed. It was on television. There it is. Oh, that must have been what would happen. Well, we looked at all of this and we were horrified. We said, what the hell is going on with our government?
Right.
Well, then you had to be able to think about, well, why would they do this? Why was this situation the case? Well, as we investigated further into this thing, we discovered that several days prior to the accident, a previously unknown terrorist organization called newspapers in Beirut and London and said, referencing the explosion at the Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia and also at a nightclub in Frankfurt that catered to American servicemen that were both bombed. They said, referring that there was going to be a third event occur that was going to amaze and astound in its audacity. Okay. They said that event was going to occur early in the morning of July the 18th. Okay. Well, in the Middle East, the morning of July 18th is equivalent to the evening of July 17th in the United States. So they had pre-warning. There also is an indication, and people have testified to this, that the Navy was in the process of trying to develop, because of what had happened to the Iran Air flight, a mechanism for our military ships, et cetera, to be able to intercept and shoot down a missile that was being fired at any airplane, but specifically an airliner. And there was a ship that was noticed just offshore of Long Island, a large gray ship with white numbers on the bow that sailed first out east along the island and then to the west just before TWA exploded overhead. Now, I also talk about in the presentation the fishing boat. Do you want me to go into that?
Yes, I think it's important. I think it's important that people understand how much happened here that was hidden from the public.
Yeah. Well, basically what occurred was at a small marina in the vicinity of basically the Calverton area and the Mauritius Inlet, where this is where the airplane came down. An individual who was described by the marina owner that rented it to them as a rather swarthy individual, dark hair, dark eyes, which spoke with a very heavy, what they believed to be a Middle Eastern accent, right, said that he wanted to go with three friends of his out on a fishing afternoon, and he demonstrated the ability to operate this 30-foot sport fisherman. He was then paid with a credit card, had identification, et cetera, and was told that the boat had to be back prior to sunset. The three friends showed up carrying a bunch of equipment that was supposedly fishing gear, et cetera, got on the boat and left. The next morning, the owner of the marina showed up. The boat was not there. They immediately contacted the Coast Guard and the police. And many hours later, the boat was found very close to another in another marina, very close to the Mauritius Inlet. The police testified that it was absolutely sanitized. There was not a single fingerprint on board. It had been cleaned up completely. The estimation is that probably this contained not a shoulder-fired missile, but a rail-fired missile, which has produced many versions by the Iranians and the Chinese. They feel that this went out, the boat went out, put itself right along the track of the departures, which you can see every single day. They follow about 2 miles off the south coast of Long Island until they get past what's called a warning area, which is a military test area out farther out over the ocean. So they're following a highway in the sky, basically. When they fired this missile, the missile went up, and this is what was seen by Captain or by Major Meyer and his co-pilot. And he stated that he saw this first missile basically explode just by the left wing and their proximity. They don't hit the airplane. They get up within the proximity of the airplane. They explode, and the shock wave is what brings the airplane down. Well, the top of the left wing, which was filled to the maximum with fuel, they found in, and they had three different zones, the red zone, the yellow zone, and the green zone. Red zone being where the explosion occurred, the yellow zone where some of the material ended up, and the green zone where the majority of the fuselage ended up. Well, they basically found small shards of material on the top, from the top wing of the airplane, which, because of the hydraulic pressure when this proximity explosion occurred, blew off, and all of the fuel that was in that wing was seen by witnesses to be a white plume that was coming behind the airplane. Well, of course, the airplane was going 300 plus miles an hour, and it was just blowing out flume or fuel there. Well, when the second explosion occurred, that set off all that fuel. That instigated the giant petroleum explosion and the blowing up, basically, of the front third of the airplane. They knew all this. And again, there were many, many people that described this in detail, and the FBI covered it up. They didn't. Matter of fact, they even said that some of the people, one woman who had probably the best view of the whole thing, stated all of this in detail. Right. Had a very good memory about it, et cetera. The FBI came in and said that she later admitted in a second interview that she had been drinking Long Island iced teas, you know how heavy alcohol those are,
of course.
And that she recanted her statement. That second interview had never happened, and she's a total teetotaler. She drinks nothing at all.
Oh, my God.
So it was lie after lie after lie after lie. But it was all sucked up. And guess who supported all of this? The mainstream media.
Of course. Who was the FBI? Who was the head of the FBI at the time that this happened?
Yeah. I want to say it was Louis Free, and I'm not absolutely sure that I'd have to go back. But Janet Reno was.
I was going to say, who was really orchestrating this? Janet Reno orchestrated a lot of cover-ups that we know about now.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
this
is not the only one. This one's scary because it involved, you know, Middle Eastern people and all kinds of stuff, and you know, it's a precursor to many things that happen after. Had we gotten the truth, you know, maybe those other events wouldn't have happened.
Two things occurred that night. And the first thing, the Clintons were at it. He was trying to get reelected, right? Yeah, that was about 3 months in the future.
Problem.
He was at a fundraiser, both of them, Hillary and Bill were at a fundraiser. They got home very shortly back to the White House, about 10 minutes after TWA-800 blew up. It was about 20 after 8, the airplane blew up at 8:30 and around. So I got that wrong. So they got there at about 8:40. At any rate, they were met at the entrance to the White House by Sandy Berger, who he was the assistant security, the national security director. He grabbed them and took them upstairs, and they were not seen again that night. He briefed them what went on. Well, again, it's the old thing of the cover-up thing. The last thing they wanted was to have an American airliner with 230 people blow up within sight of the South Shore of Long Island 2 days before the Olympics were going to happen in Atlanta, and less than 3 months or less than 4 months before the presidential election. So they began to come up with these stories. And once they did it, the old story about the genie in the bottle. Right. Once the genie gets out, you can't stuff it back in again. Right. And this became a cover-up of a cover-up of a cover-up. And all these government agencies, which we have yet now know as the deep state, got involved. And they got involved big time. And the threats and the all of the things that have gone on since are just almost beyond belief.
Yeah,
now, there's one other thing I want you to think about.
Yeah.
If they had admitted that this was a terrorist operation that brought down the airplane, there's a maybe here that the Navy, in the process of trying to intercept inadvertently, was the second missile hit the airplane. But the terrorist was the first, by sure. But if they admitted that, perhaps the government, especially the FBI, would have been more concerned with what was happening before 9/11 when Saudi students were learning not to fly, but to fly up in the air. They didn't need to learn how to take off and land. And nobody reported. There was a female FBI agent in Phoenix that reported this. It was squashed. Right. Nobody said anything about it. We ended up with 9/11. That might have been prevented.
Yeah, that's what it seems like when I look at this story. And then when we look at, here's the problem, I guess. We're at a place in America where we are, so much is being revealed so fast and so much is out there. First of all, I do not understand how the Clintons get a free pass from MENA, Arkansas forward for everything they've been involved in. They've never paid any price. They've never even been questioned. She laughed at the Benghazi investigation, which should still be done. And here we are. We had a 20-year war on terror, and yet the terror kept being covered up. And why would it be covered up? And what deals were going on behind there? What's scariest now is the guy who was just arrested as helping start the Russia hoax. I think his name is McGonigal from the FBI. He was on both these investigations, 800 and 9/11. So this is it's like the Warren Commission report, all these investigations. They come in and they manipulate all of the evidence. They know the outcome that they want to tell the American people to keep us blind and not paying attention. And I agree with you. I think a lot of things would have been thwarted if we were just told the truth about Flight 800 from the beginning. But again, we have to realize in America right now that we can no longer, you know, be head in the sand, trusting these agencies, because every day we're getting more and more FBI whistleblowers coming out because of all of this. And it goes all the way back to JFK. These are the same people again and again, and their tactics are then used by the people that replace them. And people don't know about this senior executive service, or that, you know, the FBI started from the beginning with Hoover as being very much not what we have been told. And the CIA certainly hasn't been working for we the people because of the things they've done all over the planet for themselves in the deep state that are bad for America and we the people. And you know, the bottom line is here, those poor families, first of all, they made them wait all that time so that the Navy could come and the FBI could control the investigation when those bodies should have been brought up right away. First of all, second of all, those poor, that poor family, they're still fighting to this day. So tell me a little bit about the current lawsuit that was filed, because, again, if we can unlock all of this, and listen, as Americans, we have to grow up. Anyone, there's still people out there that if you criticize the U.S. government or the U.S. military, start saying you're like some kind of Russian agent or, you know, how dare you criticize America? America needs to be honest about what's happened in America by our own government and our own military that has hurt our country and made our country a lot less safe. And the rest of the world is right now looking at America, especially with what's going on in Ukraine, and the, kind of calling it out like enough's enough. But what about the families? Because to me, the families are the ones, and the Sanders, but the families are the ones that really have been most hurt by this. And it doesn't seem that our government cared at all from the get-go about these innocent people whose lives were destroyed and torn apart, let alone the people that witnessed it, and then the whole trauma that it put the whole country through. And it really does seem that it was covered up, and I'm not really sure why they covered it up, other than... I mean, what could that be?
Okay, well, again, I feel very, very strongly that the reason that it was covered up was a very selfish reason on the part of Bill and Hillary Clinton. Obviously, his first administration had been tainted by a lot of peccadilloes, and he was now in a position of trying to be reelected. So again, I think that there was a lot of paranoia. I think Sandy Berger convinced them that they got to cover this thing up. They got to come up with another state. The other thing that is very possible, and Jack Cashel brought this up, right, and I mentioned it as well in my presentation, that the Navy, the last thing the Navy wanted to do was to admit that they had been complicit in the shootdown, even if they had done it for the best of motives, to try to intercept this missile that had been fired. So there's a Navy admiral, which I can give you his name in the future, but there's a Navy admiral there that was on top of this, and he immediately jumped in and said, okay, we gotta throw a blanket over the top of this right now, because it's going to damage the reputation of the Navy. Again, Clinton's only care was, I want to get reelected.
Right.
And they couldn't let anything bad come in. It's like what has happened in 2020, you know, with the Biden family and all of the things that went on there. All of this is covered up, not for the good of the country, but for the good of an individual or a family. Okay.
Yeah.
And that is exactly, I believe, what happened with TW-800. And again, once it starts, just like Watergate, once it starts, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. So the cover-up gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The individuals and the government agencies involved, they have their own personal agendas, protecting their own careers, et cetera, et cetera. We've seen these people and how they've operated. And the thing that is the worst about all of this is that the Fourth Estate, the press, which is supposed to investigate this, has become Pravda, you know, for the Democrat Party. And this is not right.
I mean, they plan
like
this.
Get out there and you bring it out, and God bless you for doing it.
Well, the problem is that the American people have to start being honest with themselves about what has really happened and start listening to it. So many people are in a cognitive dissonance state, and they still believe everything the government says. Look at what happened during COVID. Look at what's happening now. The biggest problem, I think, in America is that the Clintons have never been brought to justice for anything they've done from the beginning in Arkansas all the way through to JFK Jr.'s flight. People still don't know what happened with that, to other things that happened over the years, including many, many suspicious deaths that were connected to things that they were covering up, to, you know, we have the Clinton Foundation, Jeffrey Epstein and the Clinton Global Initiative. We have so many things, and all the people watch are this Clinton family, who has so much power and so much ability to quash anything and get rid of people, human beings. And I really feel like the American people have to start demanding that the Clintons answer for some of this stuff. How she treated Benghazi as a joke, or her server being wiped clean after subpoenas. this isn't okay. We have an enemy within America that continues to get away with crime after crime. And what you're saying is what I've been saying. First, they hide things under reasons of national security. If it's not about the security of we the people or this country, and it's a cover up for government criminal activity, it's not for reasons of national security. It's what JFK told us, that their secrecy was repugnant in our nation, and that he was going to end this and make things transparent. And here we are all this time later, finally making things transparent. And your presentation is a big part of that. Like I said, I'll share it here and I'll share it on our website. But people have to understand all of this is connected. It's the same people doing it. And every cover up, it's like the same cover up crew comes in. And even now, even with what happened with the election, even with what happened, all these terrorist attacks, it's this. If you look at who's involved, it tends to be the same group of people at the very top that the American people are not aware of. And then if you call it, it's a conspiracy theory. And we, the people of the United States, really have to get straight what's going on here. And I really thank you so much for your work. And I'm going to have you come back because I want you to do a whole show on the EMPs. And I have to go. But I want some last words for you from you on what we the people should be doing at this point. Because I believe these agencies are completely rogue, to the point that I've been talking to some FBI whistleblowers, and they're like, the FBI has to be dismantled. The CIA, we have to come up with a different plan, you know, maybe give it back to the states and all of that. But these FBI whistleblowers, a couple I've had on, Kyle Serafin, there's Steve Friend out there, these guys their lives are being destroyed, but they don't care anymore. They feel like for about 30 years, the FBI has been basically a cleanup operation.
Well, you asked me what people can do. One of the things is to begin to educate yourself. At least try to see both sides of the story. People like myself that have been intimately involved in this for a very, very long time, I have a Substack site. I have my own website. I have the presentation. Anyone that wants to contact me at 2022 CAPTAL, CAPTAL at gmail.com, I will send them links to various things, including the lawsuit that was filed on June 22nd of last year.
Right.
Is finally going to, in discovery, bring things out that have been covered up for this 25 plus year period.
Yeah.
That's very important to go to that. It's very important to understand where we're at. The EMP thing, absolutely. We are in very great danger there, and nothing is being done about it. We are worried about stupid things and ignoring the important things. And it's all being done for political purposes. And you'd say to, you know, you cannot continue to put the citizens of this nation in danger for your own petty political purposes. You cannot do that. But the only way we're ever going to get past this, we the people,
right,
is to educate yourself and speak out. I speak out all the time. When people say stupid things, I say, where did you get that from? Document it for me.
Right.
I have this documentation. Look at it. I have good friends, former TWA pilots, former Navy pilots, who believe very strongly in the wrong things, but I am still try to politely educate them and say, look at this, look at the other side of the story.
Right.
Stop believing everything you're being told by the national media and the Democrat Party, because it's wrong. A great, great portion of it is wrong.
Yeah, and they're one and the same. And I think anyone that really sees the truth also sees a controlled demolition of America from the inside out. And we have to identify why and how this is happening and who's involved. And you've done a lot of work on that. I honestly believe, had your work been listened to, had the investigation been a real investigation, many, many things that happened after Flight 800 wouldn't have happened. At least the American people wouldn't have taken the cover up at face value. I am going to schedule our next show as soon as we get off here, because I have to jump on another show. I wish I didn't, because I want to get into the EMPs and your book. But again, we'll put all your links below, but tell everyone where they can find your Substack and your website so they can follow you and get in touch.
Thank you, Mel. And all I can say is God bless you and people like you that are out there trying to fight the good fight. There's too few of us,
I know.
But we've still got
to do it. It's growing. I see much more openness, much more curiosity. They can't hide from what's happening now to people in their everyday lives. It took the point to get to where people are personally affected and are watching this show that's going on and this incompetent president and this insane situation in Ukraine and our borders. People are now questioning what's going on. That's the first step. So there's a lot of curiosity, which makes your work even more important right now, because people can go there and find totally documented, no BS, just the facts. So what is your Substack?
To be honest with you, it's just Captain Al at Substack. And I don't have the I should have had that up.
We'll have the link below. And what is your website for the audience to go check you out and follow you? This is not, and we have to follow this lawsuit. Those families deserve justice. The witnesses deserve justice. The Sanders and the other guys that were persecuted deserve justice. So we want to keep an eye on this lawsuit as well. So what's your website?
Like I said, the first thing I gave you that Gmail. If you, I can provide all of that stuff that I should have now.
I'm
here.
Share it on
my bigger website is, and this is all lowercase. www.captain-al-speaking.com.
Great.
And you can go to that. There's a whole section in there which is strictly devoted to TW 800, but there's other things, things that I think are important. And I talk about a lot of stuff. I'm an old guy, but my brain is still a little bit better than the individual sitting in the Oval Office. And, and you might be interested, but I will provide my Substack address to you by an email here shortly, and you'll have that. So maybe you can stick it on the site.
Yeah, we'll put everything, all of your information, it will be below the video and will be in the description box. And also, I'm going to have Rob book a second show because we got to get into the EMPs and your book coming up. Thank you so much. You are a true hero for truth and justice. I believe that we will see a lot more transparency and truth coming up, but the American people better get ready to understand where we are, where we're going, in order for all of us to unite to save this country from a small group of people that have continually put us in danger. Thank you so much, Captain Al. You are an amazing man, and we will see you again soon.
Thank you, Mel. Thank you. And again, God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Hey, it's Andrew Sorcini at Beverly Hills Precious Metals. I'm here at the Mel Kay Show. Last year, we helped so many patriots out there protect themselves against inflation with gold and silver. In 2023, we can show you how to preserve what you have, avoid further loss, and position you for greater things for your investments. So the best way for us to help you is for you to go to melkaygold.com, fill out the online form, and put in as much information about yourself as you possibly can. The more information, the more we can help you. So do it right away. The time is crucial as we head into central bank digital currencies. We can show you how to protect your 401k or your IRA, and the costs are minimal.
Hello, Patriot Pals. It's 2023 and I just got my Christmas shipment of my new MyPillow. And my new MyPillow robe, because I can't get enough of all of the MyPillow stuff. I am such a huge fan of every product. It is the best of the best. And it's not just because I love Mike Lindell and he's done so much for me and for America and for the Patriot community, but it is because these are the best products out there. I wore my robe so much last year that I got a new one. Rob's worn his slippers so much. And then we got slippers for everyone in the family and they're obsessed. People love this gift more than anything else, and I'm so grateful. The towels are the best. I have to tell you something about these towels because I use them and I've gotten rid of every other towel. Mike Lindell has done so much research on towels. I talked to him in person recently, and the truth is that there's a lot of coatings on towels, especially coming from foreign countries. He made sure that these are the most absorbent towels. Literally, you do not want to, after you get in your towels after the shower, you feel like, I don't want to really get dressed. These feel too good. I got to be honest. I'm so excited that Mike Lindell is a supporter of me and of the show and of you. We're also into my coffee. I got a challenge to try it just for a month. And now I can't even drink anymore at Dunkin' Donuts where I used to go all the time. So I've switched to MyPillow and my coffee forever. You can also go to my store And there's so many products there that are amazing. You'll be supporting Patriots. You'll be supporting the great Mike Lindell and everything he's doing for God and country. And nobody is fighting the battle harder than him to make sure that we have our sovereignty, our liberty, our freedom, and our future intact. Get over to MyPillow.com and MyStore.com. Use the code MELK. Help the show, help Mike Lindell, and help save America. Thank you so much.